Hello, Susanna Lopez here, actor turned barrister turned broadcaster turned true crime writer and proud member of Sisters in Crime Australia. Welcome to the Scarlet Stiletto Bites podcast. For over 30 years now, Sisters in Crime Australia has supported our women crime writers, both true crime and fiction, and some criminal literary talent has been unearthed. Among many awards, there's an annual prize for short crime fiction, the Scarlet Stiletto Awards. And for those of you who prefer your stories by ear, in 2023 we commenced this podcast series, Scarlet Stiletto Bites, to celebrate the sisters' 30th anniversary. Each story is short, but not always sweet. Expect twisted tales, quirky humour, and a frisson of feminism. Please support us by following, sharing, reviewing, and generally spreading the word. We have no paywall. Neurodivergence. They say there's a lot of it going about. But aren't we all on a spectrum of neurodivergence as individuals? Today's story deals with folk at the extreme end. The Barlymint Corpse by Carmela Salomon, Scarlet Stiletto winner, third prize, 2011. The problem with clozapine is it blanks things out. Bill's on a lot of clozapine. So, you can see my problem. It's his move and the chessboard's just sitting there in front of us. He's trying to remember where he wanted to move his queen. Oh, I can see that the radios are distracting him. Bill has lots of radios and he's listening out for artificial intelligence on all of them simultaneously. It makes for slow chess playing, fraying, straying, but Bill's the only one in here who can still remember to play. Oh, it's smoky. Me and Bill puffing away our disability support pensions in smoke rings. Bill can still remember how to blow a perfect smoke ring. People say it's bad for your health, but if you suck up enough smoke, the antipsychotics are less effective. Ineffective. Infective, if you get my drift. Bill's scratching his balls and coughing. He seems particularly agitated tonight. Then he pulls out his penis. It's kind of a fallback move on his part. When he can't think what else it is he should be doing. Forgotten what day it is? Penis. What to do with the toothbrush? Penis. The name of that pretty young nurse? Penis. He's old enough to be my grandfather, though, and I'm not intimidated. He's also got emphysema, so he can't run very fast. So, I tell him to put it the fuck away and we keep on playing. I wonder idly about exposing my cunt, just to see what reaction I'd get. But I think better of it. Besides, I respect the man. Bill's a chronic schizophrenic, that is. Or that's the psychiatric dog tag for him anyway. For those of you unfamiliar with the game, it goes like this. They catch you and they tag you. The tags don't mean a lot, but you can be pretty sure that if they think you're weird, you'll get a schizophrenic tag. If they think you're smart, or they want you to produce artwork to illustrate their glossy recovery story magazines, you'll earn a bipolar tag. If you freak them out, they'll tag you with the antisocial personality disorder, which is not good in any hood. For the last 3 years, I've been the perfect bipolar patient. So perfect, in fact, that I've almost convinced my psychiatrist to wipe the antisocial personality part off the record. I've stayed in New Hope Haven Intensive, locked, blocked, clocked rehabilitation centre for all this time. Except on our supervised 10-pin bowling excursions. Funny that, 2011 and all the world's allowed to move on, but not us Maddies. We're still supposed to like 10-pin bowling and roller skating if we get a real treat. As if it's some fucking 1980s revival. But anyway, I digress, transgress, express, whatever. Anyway, Bill's been through the works. Lobotomies, institutions, electroconvulsive shock therapy. If there was an Australian next top model for drug experimentation, Bill would be the fucking star. He's had the old drugs, the new drugs, the oops, we're in transition and haven't got it quite right yet drugs. He takes drugs to mediate the side effects of the other drugs, alleviate, remediate. Because let's face it, who wants to be impotent, dribble saliva all through the night and piss the bed after the age of 50? Especially if wanking off is your only reliable fallback plan. Me, I'm a bloody drug virgin compared to Bill. 2 years on olanzapine before I escaped from prying eyes. And a few bad months of clozapine after I stabbed pretty Peter Bradley in the spleen with a carving knife. And then back to oral olanzapine for good behaviour. And now I'm assuming responsibility for transition to community living by practicing self-medication, mutilation, debilitation. So you can imagine I've been dumping the tablets and faking it, making it, forsaking it. So I'm thinking clearly this night of all nights, 3 weeks after assuming responsibility, sitting here in the ash and smoke with Bill, playing chess in slow motion. So I know something's up when I hear the scream. Now, before we go any further, there are some little things you should know if you want to follow my flow. One, I'm mad. Let's not muddle it or smudge it. The parts of me that are mad are gloriously so. But unlike some of my luckier of unluckier fellow inmates, the medications never help my symptoms. So I just live with them, and you can see that stopping them never had any effect on my levels of assumed responsibility in the first place, or whether or not I understood the meaning of the scream, which at the time I didn't. Two, my symptoms of so-called madness, badness, sadness, are a propensity to rhyme words occasionally, and a disconcerting feeling that my spine is longer than my body. Sometimes the world is so bright, it breaks my heart in celebration. And sometimes it's a slum dog that leaves me lost and breathless. But it's always this world, right? I never heard any voices or saw anything. You can't see if you look, which most people don't, but that's another story, Glory. So you can see that when I heard the scream, I knew it was a scream. Three, I did stab pretty Peter Bradley in the spleen. Mean Peter Bradley, who liked messing with little girls in the playground after school and called himself a gardener. Peter Bradley, the fucking Pope, with more connections in the police force than nut grassroots, with more oily, fishy legal loopholes than Ansel Lubricant. So I told them, and they didn't listen because I was on medication after trying to kill myself, after trying to forget unsuccessfully for years about pretty Peter Bradley in the playground and and what he did to me. So I was mad, you see, and they didn't listen. Having established all that, we go back to the room. New Hope Haven, 7 p.m, me and Bill and all that smoke and history and chess and a scream. Somewhere down the long, hollow hallway that leads to the nurse's station, medication administration, old Katie Chookin is howling. It rings and it's echoes. Even over the 7 radios and Bill's laboured breathing, Bill hears it too and looks at me slyly, checking to see if it's real, or at least a shared delusion, before he shaggy dog shakes himself up to investigate, re-triangulate. We know it's old Katie Chookin because the pitch of her scream is wince high, higher than a fucking mountain high, ball kick high. She lets one off every 2 weeks before they shove the depot into her. Risperdal Consta with a needle that's longer than a donkey's penis. But it's not depot day today, so we go out to investigate. Me and Bill, brushing the clinging smoke from our clothing so we won't get reprimanded for breaking the no-smoking ban and miss out on our next outing to the 10-fucking-pin bowling disco. Bill tucking his wispy white singlet into his torn trousers and trying to look respectable. The corridor's painfully lit, as usual, with long fluorescent tubes clinging to the grey concrete ceiling, closest one to the nurse's station, flickering and buzzing. We think they keep it like that so we can't spy on them watching TV when they're supposed to be working, lurking. 5 side doors running off the sides to house the New Hope Haven inmates. Like battery chickens, but with ensuite showers and gas cookers so we can improve our activities of daily living. Bill's chipped and hand-painted with a massive sign declaring Jesus Christ the Stone Mover. Mine opposite and still locked. White and plain, apart from a picture of a vase of daffodils, and the neatly written words, "Have a lovely day and don't forget to smile." Makes me want to vomit every time I slide inside. But the nurses, curses, loved it. It was very soon after its hanging that I was granted the privilege of assuming control for my medications. So, well, I think the regurgitation's worth it. And I'm planning a second, with a teapot and a rainbow and a plaque declaring, "Nurses and angels sent down to earth to warm our souls." I've offered Bill my sign-sucking services to Bill, but he's too angry to play the game. Shame, remain. Old Katie Chookin is still standing at the end of the corridor, near the entrance to the nurse's station with her fat back to us and screaming. She's looking at something hanging from the ceiling, but we need to shuffle closer to make it out because the light's flicking and hissing down there. As we get closer, we see what old Katie Chookin is seeing. And it's not a needle, and it's not a nurse curse. It's lovely, floppy, furry, curly, barley mint, the New Hope Haven resident cat, hanging upside down from the ceiling, slightly left of centre. She's swinging from a metal hook and she's as dead as a divorcee's heart. Refried beans, plastic bags, fright right, you get my drift? Old Katie Chookin is still screaming. And from this close, the reverberation's disturbing the epicentres of my auricular canal fluid. Mohammed's door swings open and Sandy Sandpiper storms out to look. Mohammed silently glides out of Sandy Sandpiper's room a moment later, which is strange, but the screaming makes too much reasoning hard. Then Mohammed's door opens again and Polly Peter waddles his fat wobble out. He looks red and flushed. So we're all here now, the five inmates of New Hope Haven, and old Katie Chookin's scream. Standing around the barley mint corpse and waiting, perhaps for the first time in our lives, for a nurse. Only no nurse curse comes. So Bill eventually ducks under the barley mint corpse, crossing his nicotine-stained fingers over his heaving chest in some confused religious ritual before banging loudly on the surgery door. And still nothing. But it's 7 p.m. on a Sunday night and at least one nurse should be on duty, so I slide closer to investigate. As I duck under barley mint, I notice blood on her front right paw. The skin's not broken, but it looks like she's taken a little bit of her killer's blood under her claws for the ride. Pride. Her paws look bumpy, like she's done a death march through sand. Me and Bill, standing with our faces squashed against the small perspex pane, peering inside the nurse's station, the barley mint corpse swinging to and fro here and there on the taut rope behind us. Well, at first I can't spy a body inside, but I smell fish and chips, so I know it's crooked nurse Stratzner on shift. Stratzner comes from some Pacific island somewhere and loves only two things in life, cricket and seafood. He walks with a crooked walk and he's also partially deaf, which would explain the failure to show, in spite of old Katie Chookin's one-woman fucking operatic symphony. I can just make him out, slouching in the far corner of the surgery, watching cricket on the TV. Fish and chips on the table beside him. Bill's getting edgy from our close proximity to the barley mint corpse and his hand is snaking towards his penis again. We're all sweating from anxiety and the steamy, hot midsummer night air. I hit Bill's hand away and he loses his balance, smacking the door on his slow tumble to the prickly blue barley mint shadowed carpet. The Bill falling sound finally does what old Katie Chookin's operatics had failed to do up until now, and Nurse Stratzner looks up. On cue, old Katie Chookin stops screaming and we all wiggle in the widening silence. "What are you lot at?" Stratzner sniggers as he ambles reluctantly away from the TV screen. "It's not Halloween and there's no trick or treat, so go away." Then he laughs at his own joke as if it's funny. Crummy. Dummy. But Bill keeps on banging. So eventually he opens the door and stops dead, the blacks of his eyes widening and swinging wildly as he follows the barley mint corpse on its slow ceiling circles. Sandy Sandpiper starts laughing and clapping her hands as if at a fine performance. Stratzner focuses his gaze on her and frowns. "All right, you lot," he starts up, looking less than enthusiastic about the task ahead of him. "Which one of you did it?" You can see his eyes flicking back to the TV at the end of the nurse's station, and you know he doesn't care a rat's ass about barley mint, but does have the bees in his backside to get back to the match. No one says a word. Sandy Sandpiper continues her small celebratory jiggles, her body undulating in its tight red strapless dress, which would have been sexy perhaps 20 years before its journey through op shops and all number of bodily fluids have left questionable stains in the worn-out fabric. Mohammed is closing his eyes and appears to be concentrating. Bill is glaring daggers at Sandy Sandpiper, or perhaps he is just back in silent communication with his artificial intelligence. His lips are moving at a fast pace with no sound coming out. Polly Peter is staring in agitation at the barley mint corpse and looking dreadfully bothered. There's a big, fat, hairy silence. Then Polly Peter bursts out, demanding that Stratzner let him bury the barley mint corpse immediately in the garden bed at the other end of the corridor. I say garden bed loosely because actually it's just a patch of dirt surrounded on all sides by tall brick walls to stop any great escapes, remakes, breaks, but one must exercise imagination when one's in a cage. Rage. Stratzner grunts in agreement. He's clearly keen to get back to the cricket and seems relieved not to have to touch the corpse himself. He makes one more show of huff and puff, calling us crazy and warning he'll be writing about the incident in our progress notes and that our psychiatrist will hear of it and investigate. And maybe some more medication will help the truth come out. Old Katie Chookin, who has a habit of thinking that the whole world is talking about her, starts up screaming again, swearing she'll inject the risperdal consta up Stratzner's ass if he gets the dose increased. He's unperturbed and closes the door in our faces. There's a strange moment where we all look at each other, a certain something in the air. Then we dissipate like smoke or swallowed whiskey back to our corners and murmurs. I go back to my room thoughtfully, chess and Bill forgotten, because Crooked Stratzner is right about one thing. It's a locked unit. It's 7:30 on a Sunday evening. No one else has been here since the fish and chip shop girl brought Stratzner's delivery at 6:10 p.m. and I had passed through the corridor as she left, and Barley Mint was still alive and well, haughtily patrolling the corridor in her usual manner. So one of us must have done it. So I pick up my notebook and make a list of names. Sandy Sandpiper, Stratzner, Old Katie Chookin, Polly Peter, Mohammed, Bill, me, Barley Mint. That's it. The only bodies in New Hope Haven, Raven Craven. I cross off Barley Mint since she's dead, and I never heard of a cat nailing a hook on a ceiling then proceeding to hang herself from it. I cross off me and Bill, and yet I was only playing chess with Bill for half an hour or so before the screaming, and I didn't look down the corridor when I crossed over to commence our game. So Barley Mint could already have been there. So Bill could have done it. So his name goes back on the list. I start with Stratzner, since there's nothing more suspicious than a nurse curse at the best of times, and even though Crooked Stratzner isn't the worst of them, I wouldn't trust him with a bag of bones. Also, there's the cat flap into the nurse's station, so he had easy access to Barley Mint and ample privacy to strangle her and hang her up without prying eyes spies. I go directly back to the nurse's station, noting on passing that the Barley Mint corpse has already gone. Even the hook's been removed. Polly Peter must be more efficient than he sometimes looks. When I finally get Stratzner's attention, I wring my hands in a show of anxiety and cry out that I've had a fright from Barley Mint's murder, and could I just have some one-on-one time to ventilate? He grunts and tells me to come inside the nurse's station. He turns to unlock the medicine cupboard at the same time and calls out, Olanzapine or Valium? This is one-on-one time to ventilate, in nurse's terms, by the way. Medicate or medicate. Then go away to ruminate, vegetate, debilitate. I ask in return if he killed Barleymint. Straight out. Just to shock him and see if I can trip him up. He doesn't take the bait, though. He just sighs his old man bored as nails sigh. He's wearing a thick blue knitted sweater and long pants. His black shoes are unpolished, his hair is mildly disarrayed in its usual fashion, and his eyes keep on creeping back to the cricket. The room itself looks neat and tidy in its usual state of nursiness. Deciding I'll get no more out of him, I tell him I changed my mind and let myself back out. Stratson ambles back to his TV, giving nothing away, which doesn't mean nothing. It's Sandy Sandpiper's turn next. Her door's on the same side of the corridor as Bill's, but closer to where the corpse was found. It would have been easy for her to do the deed, then slip back inside before anybody noticed. But then I remember she wasn't in her room when we found the corpse. Nonetheless, this time she does open the door. She's a tall, striking redhead in her mid-30s with altogether too much bosom and perfume for my taste. But Bill likes her well enough. I invite myself in and sit down on the edge of the couch. Now, I'm not normally the sort of person that would walk into a house uninvited, but Sandy Sandpiper just has so much going on that it would never occur to her to invite me. Her room's in its usual state of chaotic franticness, with lipsticks, coloured condoms and antihistamine strewn randomly on the floor, a laundry pile higher than Jack's fucking beanstalk. Again, it's not that Sandy Sandpiper wouldn't like to do the laundry. It's just like I said, she's got a lot going on in her whirly, busy red head. I ask her two questions. Why did you come out of Muhammad's room just before? And what were you doing with Polly Peter? She goes bright red, then screams out, I hate Polly Peter. He's a bad man and I don't talk to him any more ever. Then she's closed like a clam on the subject and I'm not getting a monkey's nut out of her. So I change track and surprise her with the outright question, just like I did with Stratzner. Did you murder Barleymint? She starts giggling and clapping again in that disturbingly gleeful way of hers. Oh, yes, it's fantastic, isn't it? I've been meaning to for ages. Only when I ask her how she did it, says that she can't remember and goes back to bosom watching in the mirror. So I thank her for her time and I'm on my way across the hall to where old Kate Chookin is caged up. Old Kate Chookin is a Malaysian woman of indefinite age. When she's not screaming, she lies on her bed motionless, stuck somewhere in the back of her own thoughts. Her favourite game is playing dead when student nurses come to New Hope Haven on work experience. On one occasion, she held her breath for longer than 5 minutes. Today, old Katie Chookin is wearing a hot pink sarong and a VB singlet. When she answers the door, she starts beating herself across the chest with her gnarled old fists. I know that her and Barleymint were close. In fact, Barleymint had often lie on her bed and purr like a steam train. Rain. Remain. But that doesn't mean old Katie Chookin didn't kill her. I ask her politely about her relationship with Barleymint. To be honest, I'm quite frightened of old Katie Chookin. Something about the intensity of her stare and the whites of her eyes. She cackles horribly in response, and I'm afraid that there's going to be another scream coming. Then she stops dead, grabs my wrists in a bone-bending clench and says two things. One, in some places they eat cats. Two, she should have fed Barleymint and she is a murderer. I assure her she could hardly be expected to feed Barley Mint, since she's dead. Then I unwind my bruised wrist from her vice-like grip and run. Next unit down the hallway is Mohammed. His door is blank, giving nothing away. Just like him. Mohammed answers the door promptly. His dark face is serious as he asks me in his too perfect English, "How may he please be of assistance?" I'm distracted by a fleeting smell of roses, then dismiss it as some kind of aftershock from the traumatic evening. Mohammed would be the last man on earth to pick flowers, as far as I can tell. I don't broach the subject of what he was doing in Sandy Sandpiper's room earlier, because somehow one just doesn't ask Mohammed about casual matters, but he surprises me by volunteering that it's his mother's birthday tomorrow and she will be ambulating forthwith to visit him in the prompt morning. He is neatly dressed in a clean white robe. It's got long sleeves and I think how hot he must be. He is, in fact, perspiring heavily. But I ask him politely, Mohammed, would you mind telling me if you murdered Barley Mint? And he answers just as politely that he doesn't believe in talking about the dead. Then he pauses, a shadow growing over his face as he asks me if I believe in omens. I shrug, giving nothing away in return, and close the door. Next up is Polly Peter. I find him in his bathroom, completing a very vigorous surgical hand scrub. Polly Peter tells me to come in, which would be fine if he wasn't so big or if the bathroom wasn't so small. I satisfy myself by poking my head around the door and yelling questions out from there. Polly Peter is a nondescript white man with pale brown hair who's probably in his mid-20s. His real name is Peter Smith. And no one, including Polly Peter, knows why he's called Polly Peter. Despite his weight, he manages to look somewhat like a cross between a rabbit and a librarian in his grey shorts and neat pink polo t-shirt. I ask him what was he doing with Sandy Sandpiper in Mohammed's room just before the scream, and he goes bright red, then stutters almost inaudibly. I have made a terrible mistake. I ask him what he means, but he only shakes his head and looks downcast. When the hand scrub's finished, we proceed into his living room and he asks me to have a seat on his soft white sofa, four colour coordinated cushions placed at even intervals along it. But no sooner than I've sat than he frowns at my slacks and asks me how long it's been since I washed them. They look clean to me, but perhaps beside Polly Peter, nobody looks quite clean. Polly Peter has been known to wash his clothing at least 20 times a day. Barley Mint seemed to have a great sense of it, ignoring everyone else and deliberately rubbing her long fur over his clean slacks whenever the opportunity arose. But I don't want him distracted, so I apologise and stand back up to continue the interview. I hit him with it straight out, no farce or pretence, just like I did with the others. Polly Peter, did you murder Barley Mint? He just grimaces and says, it was so messy, which could mean anything, but Polly Peter's decided to wash his hands again, and having no patience to wait through another surgical hand scrub, I make my way down the corridor to Bill. I don't bother knocking, since me and Bill have an understanding with each other. There's no easy way to ask a friend about there being a murderer, so I just jump straight into it. Bill, did you murder Barley Mint before I came over to play chess? I'll tell you what, he starts. then stops to offer me a cup of tea. I didn't and I couldn't because she wasn't hanging up there before you came to play chess. I was down there just before you came, and I don't know who did it, but I'd like to murder Sandy Sandpiper if I could get my hands on her. What were you doing down the end of the corridor at 6:30 p.m, Bill? I asked, trying to keep the feeling out of my voice. Well, he blusters, I thought that I was going to visit Mohammed to pay him back that tobacco he had lent me, only... He starts swearing inaudibly under his breath again about women and red dresses and tastelessness. It all starts to whirl faster and faster in my bed. The bits, the pieces, the parts that I had thought were not significant and the parts that I had thought that were. And I've grabbed Bill's cigarette off him and I'm puffing while I think. Oh, poor Barley Mint, I say finally. What a stupid reason to die. Bill looks at me blankly, so I explain. You see, I was confused because there were so many different reasons. Different reasons for her to die. Like Sandy Sandpiper's cat allergy, deduced from the antihistamines on the floor, and Polly Peter's abhorrence of cat hair, and Mohammed's secretiveness. And I thought that the whole musical room scenario had something to do with the murder, but I was deceived. Bill's still staring at me blankly, so I continue. Mohammed lent his room to Sandy Sandpiper in exchange for rose perfume to give to his mother on her birthday visit tomorrow. Actually, nothing at all to do with Barley Mint. Sandy Sandpiper thought she was getting a better deal because his room was neater and would give her a better chance at seducing Polly Peter, who can't stand untidiness. At first it looked like it was working, and that's when you came in, Bill, and thought you had been usurped. But Sandy Sandpiper had those large stains on her dress, and no doubt sooner or later Polly Peter couldn't stand it anymore, and he pointed it out, which killed the mood and stuffed up his chances of a romantic night with Sandy Sandpiper. That's what he meant by having made a terrible mistake. And I had thought he was talking about Barley Mint. And even though Mohammed's robes had long sleeves, it was white, and if Barley Mint scratched him in her death struggle, he would have had a blood stain, which he didn't. No, I continue hurriedly. It couldn't have been anyone else. Polly Peter could never have committed the murder because the hook the Barley Mint corpse was hanging from was slightly left of centre, and he cannot abide asymmetry. That's why he looked so disturbed when he saw the corpse and was so keen to bury it quickly. Sandy Sandpiper couldn't have committed the murder because she was with Polly Peter and because there's just too much premeditation in the murder for her to manage, even if the hook was crooked. She only fancied the idea that she could be a murderess. Old Katie Chookin actually liked Barley Mint, so her murdering Barley Mint would make no sense, but in a sense she did, because she forgot to feed Barley Mint tonight. I finished with a flourish. Bill's still blinking and looking confused, so I continue. Greed and gluttony, Bill. Greed and gluttony. It all makes sense now. Stratzner's heavy jumper, despite it being midsummer, the granules on Barley Mint's paws that I thought were sand, but which in fact were salt. Salt, Bill! Salt, don't you see? Bill doesn't see, so I continue. Stratzner is a lazy fellow, but he is passionate about two things, cricket and fish and chips. So they arrive, and he's about to get stuck into them. He even takes a few bites, but he gets momentarily distracted by the cricket, and that's when Barley Mint seals her fate. What? Bill blinks again. She comes in, takes a few bites out of his fish because she's hungry. She stands in the chips and the salt sticks to her paws. Stratsner sees, but it's too late to save his fish, so he grabs her, getting scratched in the process, hence the need to put on the thick woolen jumper despite the heat, strangles her and hangs her. Not particularly neatly, because that's not his style. Then he goes back to his cricket, waiting for us to find the corpse and blame each other for being maddies, baddies, saddies. 10 p.m, me and Bill kneeling in the dark dirt in the New Hope Haven garden. Hot summer air swirling around, planting a small wooden cross Bill has hastily constructed and I have carved on. Here lies Barley Mint, loyal cat of the residence, murdered by the brutal hands of crooked Nurse Stratsner, 2011. Of course, there is no justice in this world. Nurse Stratsner will not be dismissed. I will not be believed. But Nurse Stratsner will see this cross in the morning, and he will know that I know, and that will be something. The end. Thanks so much for listening. We'd love to get your feedback, and we'd love to reach more listeners. Our website is sistersincrime.org.au and our email address is admin@sistersincrime.org.au. Until next Friday then, when we bring you another scintillating story from Australian women crime creative.